Bible stories are always kind of interesting. And the reason that they're interesting is that they are about what is going on in the world that at that time. And the illustrations that are used in the Bible are things that people remember. The illustrations are the things that make the Bible significant for people. Daniel fit the battle of Daniel. Joshua fit the battle of Jericho. Jericho, Jericho. Joshua fit the battle of Jericho. And the walls were built up round. No? And the walls came tumbling down. You see, it has to be a certain way. It just has to be. And is your mind seeing it happening? Okay. Jesus stood by the sea. And he talked to the fishermen of Galilee. And he said, some other rhyming words, he said, follow me. And the fishermen said, oh, shove it up your nose, you know. We've had a lot of people come and try to con us. And Jesus said, as you will. But I'm speaking for the Lord. I'm speaking for God. And so they dropped their nets and followed him. Now, man, that's a very persuasive fellow, isn't it? A very persuasive fellow. Here he's just an ordinary guy walking by that nobody pays any attention to. And he, in a few moments, conned the fishermen to leave their nets and follow him, as well as the tax collector and other people, you know. And Moses, he had a real tough time. You know, most of you think Moses had it really easy. Well, Moses was a naughty boy. He was born. And then what happened? He got put into this little boat of reeds, you know. And who picked him up? Pharaoh's own daughter, you know. And so she raised him. And here she raised the very enemy of their camp, the very one who was going to destroy the Egyptian peoples, you know. And so then he was put in charge of helping to raise the pyramids and to do all the work that was done around there. And he did a good job, but he didn't like the carelessness of the people handling this, and they were being mean to the Jews who were the slaves, and he stopped them, and he killed one of the overseers because he was being so cruel. And so he had to take it on the lam. He had to run. Here he is, the Pharaoh's own favorite son, and he had to run. So he ran. And where did he go? He went off into the desert. He went off into the mountains. And what did he do? He was sitting there, and he kind of horny, and he said, I sure like to have a wife, you know. And so along comes this shepherd, who has this great flock, and the shepherd can always use another person to help herd the flock, so he takes them home. And Moses falls in love with one of his daughters. Naturally, he's ready. And of course, the daughter is always ready too. So Moses buys into this family by marrying in. And then on his 40th birthday, he gets up on top of the mountain. And he says, I really don't feel like a sheep herder. I feel like something more, some greater destiny for me. Let's see, what shall I do? Oh, yes, I'm going to go over to Egypt, and I'm going to free all those people, and I'm going to do it. Now, what authority am I going to give them? God told me to do it. And he knew that he was God. And so he said, God told me to do this. You know, and should I not follow what God tells me to do, you know? You heard that before. So, he goes over to Egypt. Now, think of it. This brilliant mind, this brilliant being, sitting, raising sheep, doing nothing. Well, he decided to become one of the greatest musicians, not two perhaps, but magicians that the country had ever seen. He was great. He was so great. And so, when he went into Egypt, he was a great magician. And he could turn the river into blood. He could make the walking stick into a serpent, you know. He could do all of that neat stuff. Well, there's no big stuff. Who's our boy who can do that?
David Copperfield.
David can do that, hands down. And so can all the other magicians. But at that time, it was kind of unusual. They didn't know about flashlights, and they didn't know about TV towers and stuff like that. So what he did was quite spectacular. And then he took the people across the Red Sea. Now, that was quite a little con job. He had to really get with the divas and all the other creatures of being and say, okay, I want the sea to open so we can go through there, because I mean, he knew what he's doing. He knew what he's doing. I want to take the people of Israel through there and free them. Well, he didn't want to free those people. He wanted their kids. He didn't want those people at all, because those people were a bunch of flakes. And so he took the people through, and he got them through there. A lot of them died in the process, but he got them through. And so then, later, as he came through, all these people were pregnant. Oh, they were having sex like it wouldn't stop. And they were having kids. And the older generations died. You know, how old were they at the time of Jesus?
30.
Okay, how long was Moses in the desert with them? 40 years. 40 years, and in that 40 year, he went through many generations. And the older generations were all dead. He was the only one of the older generation there, basically. And he was a very strange person, very charismatic, very fantastic. And so he told people about the coming through the sea, you know. And he told the people about pushing the waves aside, and the people came through. And people thought, oh boy, is this guy way out, you know. Because the people, other people who went through that experience with him were no longer there. He just had their kids. And so he raised these kids. And he told these kids, these are the things you're doing. But still, sex was the primary thing on their mind. And so when he went up in the mountain to get the Ten Commandments that he planned to go up and get, they were all having a big sex party. And when he came down and he saw how they had a graven image, they'd taken all the gold that they had been carrying with them, and they made this lamb, and they worshipped it. He was so pissed off. He just tore into them something terrible. And the Ten Commandments he had brought down were a positive set of commandments. They're in our minister's manual, I believe. And they're very beautiful, very, very beautiful. And this is true. This is true. And so then what happened? He said, you are not worthy of my attention any longer. And he went up on the mountain and he brought forth another set of Ten Commandments, which were all damnable commandments. There were, you can't do this, and you can't do that, you shouldn't do this. You know, just telling them all the things that they're going to go and do, all the things that they're going to go and do, and they're going to go and live their life that way. And society ever since has been living its life that way, because those Ten Commandments were all the things that everybody loved to do. You know, thou shalt not claim thy neighbor's wife. Thou shalt not claim thy neighbor's ass or swine or pig. You know, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's property of any kind. You know, thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not, you know, all this, kill, all these things. Now, what's the first thing they did? They went over to Joshua, the battle of Jericho, and the walls came tumbling down. So Moses took his people to the promised land in Jericho and told them to march around the city, and the walls would tumble down, and they could go in and slaughter all the people in the city, or make slaves out of them and take over their property. Well, now what right did they do? There was plenty of other land out there that was vacant. They could have gone and built their own cities. But no, they went in and stole somebody else's. And then they stole the wives that were in there, and they stole the, and they killed people. They killed them right and left with a great abandon, you know. Now, is this what the Ten Commandments were teaching? No. But it's what the Ten Commandments were teaching. Thou shalt not, and that means thou shalt. Mm-hmm. And so the people went out and did the very thing. Don't touch the wet paint, you know. You just touch it, because that's human nature. So you don't tell people not to do things, you tell people to do things. And you get results. And you get big and beautiful results. Well, this is where Moses had a problem. But he was quite a storyteller. And the stories that Moses told to the passing generations who carried them on and on into the ancient books of the Bible were quite amazing and quite beautiful. And When does the story of Abraham come along in the story of Moses? And when does the story of Lot coming out of, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah, when does that take place? So when are all these things? They're all happening virtually at the same time. We think they're different times, but they're all happening virtually at the same time. Because all time is now, as we know, but they're all happening at the same time. And these wonderful things are happening. Now, you, each one of us, we have the opportunity to right now write our own Bible. And the Bible is already inside of each one of us. It's a beautiful book, a book of recognition of our divinity. And then, as we write this Bible, do we want to write this Bible as a manipulation of other people? Or do we want to write this Bible as a revelation of all the goodness that there is in this universe and all the goodness that we can have just by claiming it, naming it, and claiming it, and enjoying it? What do we want to do? What do we want to do? Now, I will tell you what level of consciousness you are on, and I mean that in a very negative sense. I'll tell you what level of consciousness you are on by how you answer this question instantly. Don't stop and think about it, just instantly answer the question. I'm going to give you all a brand new Rolls Royce, the most expensive, the most beautiful, the most desirable, the most fabulous car made by Rolls Royce, and I'm going to give it to you right now, and I'm going to give it to you as your personal car, and it's going to have a gas tank in it that'll never run empty, and the fuel and the oil and so forth will always remain there, and it'll be a perfectly operating car, and it does not need roads to run on, because it'll roll over anything and it'll always be smooth and beautiful, and it can even fly if you want to learn how to do that. But the thing is, I say that to you. Now, I've already said it too long, but I say, I'm going to give you. Now, what's your first thought about it? Your first thought is, oh, I don't want that. I will sell it. I will give it to somebody else. I will, you know. That's your first thought. Because you don't realize that you are worthy of it. You don't realize that that is your divinity. That is your diadem. That is your royal scepter, your evidence of your mastery. Not that the car is the evidence, but your accepting of it is the evidence. And when you accept it, then everything is added unto you. But if you don't accept it because you don't think you're good enough to drive around in a beautiful car, and you know, the majority of people do not feel they're good enough to drive around in a beautiful car. They don't. You know why? Tell me quickly. Because they don't drive around in beautiful cars. There's only a few people who can afford the beautiful car. Mm-hmm. And you know, I admire the black people so much because the black people feel that they should each have a Cadillac. And the black people might not be able to have food on the table or educations for their kids and stuff like that, but they will have a Cadillac. Maybe not a brand new one, but even a brand new one they'll have. They set their sights on their true worth of being unlimited. And they're fantastic. They're fantastic. And everyone should have that attitude that they're worth it, that they are deserving, not deserving, but that's natural. Anita, you're a girl. What does a girl normally wear? A dress.
Good.
Yeah. Herb, you're a boy. What does a boy normally wear? A pair of pants, you know. Now, what kind of pants do you want? Long pants, short pants, tuxedo pants? You want Levi's? You want this? Oh, well, I want to be cool. No, you don't. You cannot tell me in one instant what any picture that you've ever seen of Princess Di, what she was wearing. Mm-hmm. You cannot tell me in one instant what Princess Di wore, because she always wore her charisma. Mm-hmm. She wore her personality, and her personality which beamed out an infinite distance from her, miles. And everyone in the awareness of her charisma, was just delighted, thrilled, made to feel that they too had that charisma, and it was sort of blessing them and uplifting them and doing all that good stuff. Now, but you don't know what she wore. You can be sure it was good stuff. You know, she had all sorts of people who chose her clothing and helped her choose her clothing and things like that. But you see, you don't know. You don't know. What do her children wear? The two young princes, what do they wear? You don't know. You think, well, if they're with their cronies in the bar, they wear whatever is the dress of the day. If they're going to go in the battle and they're going to be in the service, they're going to wear whatever uniform of service that they're in. If they're going to be royal princes in the royal parade, they're going to have their crowns and they're going to have their robes and all that sort of stuff, you know, whatever the situation calls for. But what is it that you look for when you look for the two princes in a parade? You look for their faces. You look for their charisma shining out. And one is a little more reserved than the other. But one who is unreserved is much like his mother. Just outgoing, beautiful, dynamic, loving. And you don't know what he's wearing. If he were naked, you wouldn't even know it, really. You wouldn't know it. Because you'd be looking for his face. You wouldn't be looking for his penis, you'd be looking for his face, because that's the telltale thing of who he is. And all the world looks for our face. It doesn't matter what we wear. It matters how we believe in ourselves. Now, Herb, you sure talk silly sometimes. No, I'm just forthright. Now, how do I know you are you? How do I know each of you are whoever you are? Sometimes you don't act like who you are. Sometimes you act like somebody who is afraid of your own shadow, and that's kind of a shame. But most of the time, you act just like you are. Now, Ingeborg is creating a new picture of her for us to look at. She's creating a picture of a waddling duck, you know, and she waddles along with her feet and her insecurity and so forth. And I say, Ingeborg, is that the picture you want to show yourself? And she says, no. And I say, well, Ingeborg, go to Tai Chi and practice Tai Chi. Put your feet out. But Ingeborg, when you come home, practice an hour every day on what you have learned. Lift your legs. Lift your arm. Do this. Do this. Do all those things. And in no time at all, you'll be playing tennis again. Whatever it is that you delight in. But the thing is, if you're just going to go there for a moment once a week and not practice it, why go? Why go? Oh, you learned what it is, but you don't practice it. If you don't practice something, all the good in the world that can come from having that gift is of no good to you. It's like one of my friends. She was a very lovely lady, and she won a car. She won a brand new Cadillac. And they brought it to her house and parked it outside of her house. And this is before you had to pay taxes on what you earned, you know, what you got. And so the car sat there year after year. And everyone said to her, why are you letting the car just go to rust there? That's my car. You know, you don't drive. No, but that's my car. I have a Cadillac, you know. Now, she had a Cadillac, but she had only the shell. She didn't have what it meant. The Cadillac should have meant what? Luxury. It should have meant class. She should have taken every penny that she had and used it to buy gas and drive around and then find some likely young neighbor boy who is responsible and fantastic, but he wants to earn a little money, and pay him to be her chauffeur once a day to drive her around the park and back home again. And not a long trip, but just a nice trip. And the boy would be thrilled to pieces, and he would even put on a chauffeur's uniform if such was her desire. And here she could be class without paying you through the nose for it. But can you understand the illustration? Now, can you understand the illustration you're going to remember? Who buys the most Cadillacs in the world, really?
The black people.
See how you remembered it? One little illustration. One little illustration. It's probably not true, but the thing is, black people do buy a lot of Cadillacs, and I admire them because of, not because they buy the Cadillacs, but because they feel that they, that that's who they are. They're a Cadillac person, you know. And that's beautiful. Now, Ellen's husband is a crazy coot, you know. He could have been a Cadillac person, too. But he didn't want to be a Cadillac person. What did he want to be?
Maserati.
He wanted to be a Porsche person. In his playtime, he was a Porsche person. In his business time and in his class time, he was a Maserati person. And what did he do in the Maserati? What did he have in the Maserati? He had a chauffeur, no less, to drive him around. Now, why did he choose a Maserati? Because in his mind, the Maserati represented stability, quality, and class. And that's what he visualized himself as. Now, was he stability, quality, and class?
Mm-hmm.
Very much so. Now, could he have his toy? His little Porsche? And did he drive his Porsche like some teenager?
Yes.
He sure did, didn't he? American teenager, not a teenager from Europe. Teenagers from Europe have to be a little more careful because your laws are a little different. But anywhere. You see, this is what it's all about. You remember the stories. You remember the illustrations. What happened to the people that were brought by Moses from Egypt?
The older generation, they all died.
The people all died. Every single person he took out of Egypt died. There wasn't much to eat. There wasn't much water to have. He took them through some pretty tough things. And as they got older and older and older, they got more subject to problems. And then they worried and they bitched and they screamed and they ranted and they raved about how terrible everything was. And he said, drop dead. So they dropped dead. And then, but their kids lived on. And don't think that, I mean, think that Moses took time with these children to teach them. And what did he teach them? You are the chosen people who shall go to the
promised land.
My goodness sakes, what a thing to teach. Hitler did a good job of that too, didn't he? He taught the German people that they were the chosen people, that they were the Aryan people who were the greatest race of people that ever walked the face of the earth. Well, he may have been right. But he never had a chance to prove it because he got angry and he let his anger destroy him. And his anger was being mad at the Jews because the Jews loaned him the money to have his war because they were just out to make money off of their money. And so then he turned on the Jews and put them all in concentration camps and got rid of them all. I mean, we all pay our own prices for these things, you know. And we do these things. And then what did the Swiss do? The Swiss says, we'll hold the money for you. We'll hold the money for you. Well, Moses died, and all the Jews died, and now whose money was it? Were there any living relatives? Did the living relatives realize that their daddy and mama had left their money in the Swiss banks? No. So it just went to the Swiss government. It went to the Swiss banks. And the Swiss government and Swiss banks are enjoying it now. And hey, the American government, I got a telephone call the other day from a guy who says that we could get a $15,000 grant. They'd send us a book. We send them a check for $49, and they'll send us a book on how to get grants. And I thought, hey, that's a cool little idea, you know? They don't even have to know anything. they can get the book from the government free and send it to people, and $49, if they had 1,000 people sending $49, they could really be quite comfortable.
Yeah.
Quite comfortable. And nobody's going to complain, because they're told right from the beginning, we're sending you the book on how to do it.
Yeah.
You know, not that we're going to do it for you.
Mm-hmm. But
and this is a con that's been going on for centuries. Every country has had it, and every peoples have had it, and every generation has had it. But what are you ready for? Are you ready to write your own book, write your own Bible, write your own story? Well, I say, get started. Get started, because you have a beautiful story to tell. Because you are a beautiful person. Because you would not be in my world if you were not supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. And I believe you are. And I believe I am. And I'm the happiest guy you'll ever want to meet. Have a nice day, and know that I love you.
I love you.
I love you.
I love you.